Crafting a Life Books presents A Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens.
Welcome to A Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens. You are listening to an audiobook with benefits. This audiobook is a collection of craft-lit episodes with the crafty chat removed. Audio markers have been added to indicate where one episode left off and another began, and letting you know which chapters you finished and which are to come. We hope you enjoy this audiobook with benefits. Tale of Two Cities. Couple things you need to know. One, this was really the first time that Dickens tried to do historical fiction, and he doesn't always come out. Literary criticism is kind of off and on with this. Some people think he did a brilliant job. Some people think, you know, what he's really good at is characters like Scrooge and Marley, you know, coming up with names for people that fit their character, Scrooge probably being the most famous. And he has some of those characters in this book, and they are welcome relief when we hit them. But people think he's pretty uneven at going, you know, straight plot historical fiction. I personally think he did a really good job. I think what he set out to do is what he actually accomplished. And you know how big a deal that is for me because I hated the book in high school. And I figured out, I read the first four chapters and they're boring. And I'm warning you right now, they're boring. The fifth chapter is when it starts to get good. So hang with me at least until the fifth chapter. And on that note, when I worked for Disney on the film Aladdin, every once in a while someone would say, no, we can't do that. It's Prince Generic. And if you remember Ariel in The Little Mermaid, the prince's name is Eric. And he's kind of, and he's cute and he's okay. But the people at Disney called him Prince Generic. Well, the lovers, Lucy Manette and Charles Darnay in Tale of Two Cities, are the least interesting people in the book. I personally think that's the way it's supposed to be, because you're not supposed to pay as much attention to them as you are to the other things that are happening. So Dickens got criticized for this, and I think he did the right thing. I think he did this on purpose to force us to pay attention to stuff that we wouldn't otherwise. We would be reading the romance and we would be getting swept up into it. And that's what we do. You know, it's like, oh, they're so wonderful. They're in love. This is fabulous. No, he doesn't really want you to look at that. There's other stuff that's far more important. Look over here. So I'm just warning you, don't be surprised when you go, wow, they have no personality. You should also know that Dickens was ambivalent at best about the revolution. He is very, very clear about how horrible the conditions were in France. And you will be shocked at some of the descriptions of things that I'm positive are true. You know, he didn't live all that long past the French Revolution. The Reign of Terror didn't end all that long ago for him. So it is obvious to me, and the lit crit that I've read has kind of supported this, he heard plenty of real stories about what was going on in France prior to the revolution. And he's really, really clear that that's bad. He's also pretty clear that the response by the normal people, the peasants, the middle and the lower classes, was also pretty bad. And that's interesting, because you don't often see somebody say, yeah, they're bad, so are you. You know, when there's a revolution, we tend to, especially in America, we tend to side with the underdogs or the revolutionaries, because we were. And sometimes you have to look at what the revolutionaries are doing and going, you know, you're not Gandhi. Gandhi's hard to argue with. You're not Gandhi. We can argue with you and your methods pretty easily. And that is definitely what you see in Dickens's kind of commentary on the French Revolution. I'm also warning you, it'll make you cry. I spent a good week while I was listening to this. Oh, it made me cry. It was great. And there's also more knitting in the book than I thought there would be, which is kind of fun. I am going to start the book now, but I am warning you, the first chapter, which is the setup of the dualities, and for those of you who remember, it starts with, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. He couldn't make it any clearer for you. He is going to show you both sides of the coin. The chapter is very much a product of its time, and there are a lot of little side comments and jokes that I wound up researching just so I could fill in the blanks for you and make what I think has become a rather dull, although short, chapter into something that's at least meaningful, if not interesting. This is the only time I've ever done this so far. I don't know if I'm ever going to have to do it again, but this chapter, I think, demanded that I break into the narrative and say, okay, did you hear that? What he's talking about is, and then I'll let the narrative go. And I do understand that this can be completely frustrating to some of you. So if you want to, you can go listen at LibriVox to the unadulterated version. Go find the version that is read by Paul Adams. He is the reader that we are listening to. I think I've set things up. We start with our dualities. I'll fill in the blanks as we go. And so, with no further ado, I give you Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens.
Book One. Chapter One, The Period. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. We had everything before us. We had nothing before us. We were all going direct to heaven. We were all going direct the other way. In short, the period was so far like the present period that some of its noisiest authorities insisted on its being received, for good or for evil, in the superlative degree of comparison only.
All right, so here I am back again. This is Dickens setting up the fact that, number one, nothing is